Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Good evening, friends and curious family. Episode 88. We are creeping up so close to episode 100, and I can't wait. I can't wait. It's going to be a great episode. Speaking of great episodes, we have a fantastic one tonight. We will be getting into some conversation here in a moment with the Oklahoma director of MUFON, as well as NDE and ET experiencer Mindy Topfest, talking about the world of the experiencer, and specifically the world of the NDE slash ET experiencer, and the great number of people who have actively had both experiences, and how one leads to another, possibly, and that holographic connection, as she puts it in her book. We'll be getting into that here in just a moment. After the commercial break, we will be joined by our good friend, Sev Talk, the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. She was the MC at last year's MUFON Con. This year's MUFON Symposium is happening in Virginia. That will be coming up, or I'm sorry, Cincinnati, Ohio, coming up August 24th to 27th. Make sure to stop on by and buy your tickets for that, folks. MUFONsymposium.com. Curious Realm is an official sponsor of this event. This is one of the many events nationally that we have put ourselves behind as sponsors. I highly believe in the work of MUFON. I am proud to say I am a MUFON lifetime member. I am a MUFON benefactor. I could put my money behind politics if I wanted to. This is one of the causes that I choose to support. One of the many others, we were saying, stay tuned for epic episodes. This upcoming week, as a matter of fact, 2 days from now, I leave for the IRVA, International Remote Viewing Association, and Monroe Institute Conference, of which we are a sponsor as well. That is the one that is in Virginia. Which is why Virginia was on my mind a second ago. But we will be going there, covering the event, talking to speakers, presenters, researchers, authors about the world of remote viewing and binaural beats, meditation, things like that, brainwave functioning. That will be a fantastic conference. Can't wait for that. The weekend after that, we will be going to Texas UFO Con here in Texas. Joining our good friend Craig Woolheater out there, as well as many researchers like Nick Redfern and more. Then after that, we will be going to MUFONCon, catching up with our good friend that we'll talk with here in a minute, Mindy Topfest, as well as Sev Talk and many others. And then after that is Texas Dogman and Cryptid Conference. So it is a rousing month of live coverage, folks. Get ready for bomb long episodes. I know that you are used to 2-3 hour episodes here and there. But as you know, whenever we do live coverage, it is not parsed out. We don't like, oh, here's part of it. Here's part of it. It is a chunk. It is an episode. I know last year, our MUFON episode, I think went 9.5 hours total of coverage and interviews with people. So stay tuned for those coverage points, folks. We will be getting into that and so much more this year at all of these live events. Our guest in this segment, Mindy Topfest, she once again is the Oklahoma director of MUFON. She is the author of Dying to Meet Them. She is an NDE and ET experiencer. Welcome to the show, Mindy. How are you doing this evening?
Thank you, Christopher. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for coming on. I had a chance to meet you last year at the MUFON Symposium in Denver. It was a great event. And I was so happy to see that you have now gone through and shared your experience in book format, which is an amazing experience going through. In our pre-show conversation, we were just talking about some of the action that starts happening toward the end of the book. But without the beginning of the book, without the beginning of your story, Mindy, it's such a transformative story. It really is. Let's introduce the audience to, at the beginning. What was your NDE experience? How did you come about having a near-death experience, Mindy?
Well, it was in November 8th of 2016, and I was at home alone that day. It was the day of the big, Trump versus Hillary.
Yeah.
And so I was waiting for my husband to get home with my kids. At the time, my children were 6 and 8 years old. And it was, towards the end of the school day, I was waiting for them to come in the door and so we could go vote. And that's whenever I heard this loud explosion in my head. And at the time, I knew that I had a disorder which could cause aneurysms, but I was not suspected of having that type. It was supposed to be just more like joint dislocations and stuff like that, just body pain. And so whenever I heard that explosion, my first instinct was I thought that I had been shot in the head because there had been coyote hunters around where we lived. And we lived on this huge 300-acre wheat farm out just right across the street from my father-in-law. We had moved out there just prior to this to help him with, some of the wheat harvest and taking care of the cattle and everything because he's up in his 70s and, kind of needed our help around there. So whenever the gunshot sound went off in my head, I thought that I had been shot. And whenever I started kind of assessing it, I thought, okay, well, I don't feel any blood or anything. This has got to be an aneurysm. And whenever I realized that there was this, and I describe it in the book as an electric avalanche, and that's about the best I can put into words. It was like a peeling away from the top of my head all the way down to my feet. And it was excruciating. It just felt like parts of me were all the shell of me was being peeled away. And I started thinking, oh God, this is really, really bad. I had worked as an ICU nurse for 10 years prior to that. So I was kind of trying to assess, what are my chances of survival here?
Yeah.
Being out here. Yeah. Way out in the middle of nowhere with nobody around. And then, of course, my thoughts turned to my husband and children. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying, and they're going to come in this door, expecting to give me hugs and kisses and tell me about their day, and they're going to find me dead. And so immediately I switched to praying. My husband was a Southern Baptist minister, and we had traveled all over Oklahoma preaching the gospel. And so immediately I turned to my Christian teaching, and I'm praying to God, if I can survive this, please let me survive it. And I don't want my kids and my husband to find me because that's just going to devastate them. So the next thing I know, I'm praying. I'm really immersed in praying. And I mean, the pain is excruciating. My skull felt like it was on fire. And I described it as lava going through my skull. And I imagine did a number on all of the nerves and everything within my head. But anyway, so I was immersed in praying, and the next thing I know, I open my eyes and I'm looking around and I'm in complete darkness. And I thought, okay, this is different. And I realize I'm not hurting. There's no pain, no nothing. And I'm just kind of out here in this darkness. So my first instinct, and you see on the front of the book there's a hand in the darkness, because that was my first instinct, was to put my hand out in front of me to see if I could see it. I was trying to determine, is it dark or is there nothing here? So I put my hand out and I couldn't see it. So I was like, okay, I can't see it. Let me see if I have hands. So I then started trying to clap. And whenever I did that, I realized, oh no, I'm dead. Like, I have no form here. Wow. So I was just kind of this consciousness floating in this darkness. And I, again, turned directly to my Christian teaching. I'm like, okay, so what comes next? You know, Jesus should be here, and, you know, there should be a tunnel of light, and the friends and family should gather around me. And so I'm waiting for all of this. And there's some joy there because I'm waiting to be reunited with some loved ones.
Sure, sure.
But I'm also,
yeah.
But I'm also terrified because I believe I'm either going to be immediately sent to hell or welcomed into heaven.
Yeah, anticipation.
Right.
It's
yeah, anticipation.
It's the same thing, but it can lead to joy or fear.
Right. Well, and, you know, I had been baptized and saved and everything, and I had that assurance. But when you are over there in that moment, I don't see how anyone could not have a little bit of fear.
Well, so yeah, it's that moment of there are no atheists in foxholes, Mindy.
Exactly.
You know, like, that's, I don't exactly care who it. You are, how big you are, you're scared.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, I don't care how big and brave you are, whatever. Like, that is a humbling moment in life.
It truly is, because I was out there alone. And so I immediately started turning to prayer again. Mm. While I was on the other side, I'm praying, Jesus, be my righteousness. I can't get in without you, you know, because you start reflecting and you're like, I know the dirty deeds I've done, you know.
Sure, sure. And, were they bad enough? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, true moments of, well, Christian self-doubt or self-doubt period of am I yeah, worthy?
And exactly.
When that experience happened to you, Mindy, one of the things that I was struck by in your book, let me pull this out here real quick, because it's up around page 50 or 16, actually.
Okay.
There was a rawness to my emotion, and I felt as though my consciousness had been fully unboxed for the first time. My being was completely exposed, and the contents of my soul were placed in full view of myself. Every emotion I was feeling was laid bare and amplified by the fact that I, myself, had no form and was in all totality just my thoughts and emotion floating in this abyss. My panic only grew as my cries continually went unanswered. In that moment, were you afraid that your Christian upbringing had failed you?
I was, absolutely, because I felt like I was over there for so long, because time did not move the way it does here. It was timeless. It was limitless. And so my experience over there, and I don't know how long I was dead. Mm. I couldn't even begin to tell you, because I was home alone, you know, with no one there to, you know, count the time. God. So, man. I don't know how long I really was there, but it felt like an eternity, because I was praying for Jesus and I was waiting. And as I was waiting, nothing was happening. Jesus didn't show up. The loved ones didn't show up. The tunnel of light didn't appear. And that's whenever I really panicked.
Did any of that ever happen during your experience, Mindy?
It did not.
And
that was
one of the questions that we'll get into later with Sev Talk. And one of the things that we have asked experiencers of so many things, Mindy, especially when it comes to near death, especially when it comes to alien experience, things like that, is, A, was it happy and joyful, or was it fearful for you? And was there a message? Because, believe it or not, folks, frequently there is no message. Like, you are not by yourself, Mindy, as somebody who sponsored the Near Death Association conference last year and went to it. You are not by yourself in having that lonely experience on the other side.
Yeah. Well, you know? Thankfully, mine turned into something that wasn't so terrible. Mm. That panic, the initial panic, I ended up reflecting. I didn't necessarily have a life review, but it was more a personal reflection of just kind of looking over my life and thinking, you know, what have I done and why am I not good enough? That was how I really felt. Why am I not good enough? I've preached your gospel. I've done everything that I could for you. I've loved you, you know, and I've tried to do right by you. And why have you forsaken me? And that's how I truly felt.
Yes.
And what came to me was, you have to learn to love yourself. It seemed like I had always loved others plenty.
And but put them first.
It was. And I had to learn that I was worthy. And as soon as I did that, that's whenever the male force showed up behind me. And while I was there, I felt God everywhere around me. I felt like I was almost in an invisible box where I was separate from everything in creation. Mm. And when I say that, it was almost like a primordial area where everything was just right before the spark of coming into existence. Everything existed there and I was separate from it. And I had just lost my husband and children. I was devastated because I was no longer with my husband and children. I completely lost people that meant the most to me. So while they would have been over here mourning me, I was over there mourning them. And
interesting.
So I was completely devastated. But whenever I finally got to the realization, I have to love myself to know that I'm worthy for more. That's whenever the male presence showed up over my left shoulder. And he came up behind me and it was almost like a cold, caring spirit. Yeah. And I couldn't identify him as human. He didn't feel like angelic. He didn't feel, you know, it wasn't God himself. I don't know who or what it was, but it was definitely male. And it came up behind me and he said, "You're not here forever." And I was like, "Okay, someone's here. You know, I'm not here forever."
Something.
Yes, it was the first hope that I had while over there. Mm. And I say in the book, it almost felt like he was breaking the rules. I felt like he had been watching me and just my suffering was to the point where he overstepped his bounds, where he went ahead and interfered to calm me some. And whenever he told me that, he and I started sailing off to the left. And as we were sailing, I saw to the right in front of me this purple glow. And as we kept going towards it, I could see all these pink and intersecting lines in it. And it, where they met up, they glowed bright yellow. And he told me, "That's the fabric of humanity." And whenever he told me this, it was like I instantly knew it. It wasn't like he spoke to me or anything. It was like telepathic. And it was almost like it was my own thought, but it was coming from him. And I thought, wow. And it just radiated such love. And I wanted to go towards it so bad. And he gave me the impression of, "No, that's not for you." And so we continued sailing off to the left. And once we did, boom, I was back in my body. And whenever I woke up, it was like a hard restart. And the pain was instant, the ringing in the ears. I lost 70% of my hearing at that time. And it progressed up to 90% now. Yeah.
Wow.
So now I get to wear hearing aids. But, you know, that's a small price for how far I've come in other areas. But whenever I woke up, I was slumped over on the couch and just in complete panic. And I was searching for my cell phone and I ended up finding it and calling my father-in-law, who was just right across from us. I mean, right across from us in the wheat field. And whenever I called him, he heard me slurring my words so bad that he knew immediately something was wrong, and he just ran across the street, and he was in the living room within 45 seconds, a minute, and was there with me. So I knew at that point, okay, someone's here, you know, my children aren't going to find my body, and I have a chance of beating whatever has happened to me.
Wow. Wow. And what, come to find out, Mindy, what was it exactly that had happened to you?
It actually, it's funny. I go in on the book and speak about kind of the 2 years of suffering that I went through, because the doctors there were just not equipped to deal with what had happened. They kept sending me home telling me that my neck had shifted or that I was having a migraine. At the time, I was actually having multiple strokes from where that had clotted off and it was blocking the artery, and I was having a stroke. And I had been told, don't go back to the ER. It's not life threatening. It's a migraine. And so I would sit in the bathtub trying to relax while having a stroke with my right arm limp and, you know, my speech slurring. And it's a wonder I survived. So after 2 years, we ended up selling our house and moving to Oklahoma City. And when we moved in, things were still in boxes. And so we had a little Fire Stick or a Roku or something, and we had plugged that in just to watch TV. And there was a commercial that came on that was like Heroes of the Hospital, you know, and it had this young nurse, a young blonde nurse that had gone into the shower, and she said she had leaned back to rinse out the shampoo in her hair and heard a loud pop. And she had fallen to the ground and she had lost control of her right arm and her speech was slurred. And it was the exact same thing that happened to me. And I thought, okay, I looked at my husband. I said, whatever that is what happened. And it was funny because that commercial had kept coming up until we paid attention to it. After we watched it, I never saw it again, but I went online and looked up the nurse's name so I could see what happened. And she had had a vertebral artery dissection. And I had never heard of that being a nurse. And so I ended up calling that doctor who diagnosed her and went into her, and she probably thought I was nuts because this is such a rare condition, a rare happening. And so I'm going in and I'm bawling to this doctor. I'm like, it's just like the nurse in the commercial. I know that's what happened. She's like, you understand it's extremely rare. Yes, I do. But she sent me in for the testing, and within 2 weeks I was in and they had found it. And I remember the radiologist kind of waking me on the table and he's like, we found it. And there were actually two large chunks of my vertebral artery that had blown out there in my neck. Wow. So it was a wonder that I survived. Most people don't survive it.
Yeah. That is, and once again, an incredible story of survival and an incredible story of not necessarily being given mission when on the other side, but coming back with a newfound mission. And once again, it's interesting because as I told you before we started, one of my missions with this show is to demystify things for the common person. And a big misconception with near-death experience is that there's a big bright light. Like you said, you were looking for the bright light and your friends and like your old dog and a message for your life, you know, like go back, remember third grade, something like that. And that did not happen. And it did that cause when you came back, Mindy, did that lack of experience, because as you said, that was definitely a test of your faith at that moment. Did that change your personal belief in any way? Did it change the way that you look at your faith?
Absolutely. One of the things that I go into is the years that followed, those first couple of years was whenever the pandemic came up and everything. And I did not tell my husband for 2 years. I ended up going through counseling for PTSD. And I had full memory of my time on the other side, but I did not want to devastate my husband. My husband is such a very religious, deeply, deeply Christian man. And I did not want to have him choose between his wife and his faith. And I,
sure.
So I struggled. I kept it to myself because I did not want to put that onto him because I didn't even know where I stood anymore. Yeah. So I went through counseling for the PTSD because every time that the kids would drop something or anything, I thought that I was having another, you know, episode.
Yeah. Somebody pops and a can of biscuits and.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was so on edge. And for that first 2 years, I was nearly passing out every day. I was laying on the couch, just kind of languishing. And I was so angry with God because I said, why did you return me to this life to have this kind of existence? Because I was unable to drive. I wasn't able to take care of the kids. I wasn't cooking dinner anymore. I wasn't doing anything around the house. My wonderful husband was going to work. He was working 3-4 jobs at the time, trying to cover all the medical bills. Then he'd come home and take care of the kids. And he was doing all of the housework and he was taking care of me. And here I was laying on the couch, you know, and with nothing to show, no diagnosis or anything. And so people were questioning, you know, what I'm, my own family members were questioning my mental health. Is it anxiety? You know, what's going on with you? And I'm like, something happened. So I had so much disbelief that something physical had happened during that time. How in the world would anybody believe me about what happened on the other side? I wasn't even beginning to start to approach it within those first 2 years because I was still just trying to deal with the physical side of things and trying to figure out where my own faith lie, you know, was at that time. And I started kind of looking into other religions and what their beliefs were. At the time, I always called it the dark abyss. And I came to find out that it was called the void, traditionally is what people called it. And so I started looking into that. Finally, after I told my husband, and it was right at the start of the pandemic, because I had contacted my counselor and I said, there is something I want to tell you. And I was so ready to share the near-death experience with her. And then it was the 2 weeks to kill the curve. And everything shut down. And I was like, okay, well, I can wait 2 weeks. Well, yeah, 2 weeks came and went. Jump. Yeah. And we all know how it just went on and on. So I ended up, you know, my husband was cooking dinner one night and I looked at him and I said, I've got to tell you something. I was just to that point and it was just word vomit and I just cried and cried and my children were sitting on the couch and just looking at me with their mouths gaping open because I wish that I would have recorded those first conversations because some of the things that came out of my mouth were so profound. And as time has gone on, I've lost some of that connection and some of the things that I brought from that other side.
Yeah.
But my husband was so wonderful with it. He said, you know, let's figure this out together. And so that really kind of started our journey together in trying to understand what had happened.
Well, and you phrase it beautifully here. Let me read this little passage. Occasionally, I would notice that I did not feel like I was living completely back in this reality. The feeling had gotten better as more time had elapsed since my near-death experience, but I still battled with the persistent thoughts and feelings fairly regularly. Although my experience on the other side had been terrifying, I no longer felt like this earth was my true home. I felt like I was a complete stranger here. I knew that there was a much bigger reality on the other side of existence, but I wanted tremendously to be able to enjoy my life here with my family. It's the whole reason why I'd fought so hard to return. I knew I needed help working through these things, and I felt that I was finally nearly ready to share the full story of what had taken place after my dying moments. And like you said, to not share, one of the things that we discuss regularly on this show, Mindy, is the fact of whether they're shared experiences with some. It's interesting how sometimes people have shared experience, And they don't talk about it for years, like our good friend and guest Terry Lovelace, who he and his friend, who he was an EMT with, ended up not talking. They split up after years and years of friendship. They both had this experience. They were both there. Yeah. And it drove a wedge between them because they didn't know how to talk about it. And
right.
And like you're saying, even though you were Christian, your husband's Christian, your faith was questioned so much when you were on the other side. The last thing you wanted to do was bring it up to your husband. Right. And have him question his faith and now his relationship with you.
Right.
that's a tough, and like you said in the book, you then started finding resources for PTSD and realizing the fact that you had suffered traumatically through this event.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you bring up, you know, the split with Lovelace. With near-death experiencers, more than 80% of couples end in divorce because it changes people so much.
Yeah.
And I can see how that is. Thankfully, my husband was, completely understanding and supported me and said, we'll figure it out together. And he's actually the one that found IONS. Mm. And
yeah.
Let us down that road. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And so they are a great organization. Like I said, I sponsored the IANS conference and was there last year. An amazing community of people.
Right.
That was an amazingly moving event. So much so that the energy, I think, was actively responsible for me partially getting sick. There was so much energy, just so much. It was an overload, of love and joy and amazing things, but it was an energetic overload. I go to a lot of conferences of paranormal and things like that, but nothing kicked me in the gut like walking in to that conference. The energy surrounding those survivors is so intense.
It is.
And when you,
friends will tell you that too.
Yeah, it's one thing to be in the presence of one of them. It's another thing to walk into a room of like 500 of them.
Full of it. Yeah. Well, one of the things with IONS, we had signed up to be on their sharing groups, and the first one that we went to, it was so hard. I sat and ugly cried and kept turning off my camera. And, they were sharing all these wonderful experiences. There were probably four people in there that had actually had a near-death experience. And there were others there that were interested in it or others who had had encounters during meditation. So I just kind of sat back and watched. And at the end, the facilitator said, "Mindy, I see you're new here. Would you like to share anything?" And so there, that was the second time I shared about it. I'd shared with my husband and now I was sharing with them. And they were so supportive and, it was on a Zoom call. So they were like putting up little hearts and, people were holding their hands to their chest and just showing all kinds of signs of love and support. And it was so welcome. But I had gone to other meetings after that, and I started feeling more and more like an outsider. And it wasn't their fault. It was just because everyone else had these wonderful homecomings where they were in the lap of Jesus, and I did not. And so I was kind of the outsider saying, "No, I was terrified." Things didn't go my way. And they ended up putting together a meeting for distressing near-death experiencers. And that was much more helpful for me to connect with other people that had, some of these darker experiences, because that's one of the aspects that people don't want to talk about. No one wants to be reminded that they could end up not going to heaven,
or that there is actually another option.
Right. I ended up finding Nancy Evans Bush is incredible. I don't know if you've ever read any of her books, Dancing Past the Dark, and I think Buddha at the Gas Pump. She is amazing. She had a distressing near-death experience. She actually coined the term distressing near-death experience, and she worked as the secretary for Dr. Ken Ring and them at IONS for years and years. And I had reached out to her after going through some of the IONS meetings and everything and really connected with her. And she has just been a wonderful guiding light for me and accepting what had happened and seeing the bigger meaning out of it and understanding that that was exactly what my spirit needed. Because I've told people before, if I would have gone to heaven, I would have probably come back here and been like, well, I know where I'm going. But this has
would it have really changed you and catalyzed you in the way that your experience has, you know, or would it have led you just down a road of comfortability as to what you were already doing?
Exactly.
And the impacts you were already making. And that's a very, very good self-analysis question coming from a literal PTSD sufferer at a time of PTSD, Mindy. So kudos to you. It's not easy, number one, to admit that you, A, have had an experience, and that, B, your experience is not a pleasant one. It's something that I discuss on the show regularly. Like I said, I like to demystify things, and for some reason, Mindy, and don't get me wrong, with the desire for the event comes the desire for research, you know?
Yeah, it does.
But at the same time, if you're out there and you're looking at the skies and you're like, you know, I'd love to be taken by an alien craft, feel free to read one of these books.
Yeah.
Any one of them. Because rarely does it start out with, so my experience was fantastic. It was amazing. Yeah. It was everything I dreamed it would be and more, you know? That's not how the stories start. Unfortunately, and yes, there are numerous stories of people visiting the other side, going beyond this life. And like you said, Mindy, either not having a message and being lost because of that, because of the misunderstanding, even Christian wise, not Christian wise, there is a generalized understanding that when you die, like there's a light and people say, howdy. You know,
yeah,
things like that, and not necessarily the case. And that might be frightening to you if what you were expecting is the howdy, you know,
right. That's something I get into in the book is the opposite of the dark versus light. And within the UFO community, we typically, in the past, we've seen more of the frightening side where it's more darker and, you know, things like fire in the sky, war of the worlds.
Communion.
You
know,
it's all kind of fear-based.
Yeah.
And on the near-death experiencer side, most of it is all light and love and positivity. But there is so much gray there. And there have been so many studies now where UFO experiencers, not all of them, it may start off as a frightening experience, but they actually come to look forward to their contact experiences.
Yeah.
One of my good friends actually had an alien healing from a reptilian.
That is one of the going in very interesting fields of study with the ERT, the Experiencer Resource Team with MUFON, especially the new work being done by Kathleen Martin, her new spiritual survey in regards to UFO UAP experiencing and experiencers of contact. It's phenomenal to see how things are opening up in that way.
Kathy,
how many cases there are of people coming back with, once again, either being healed of something or having healing qualities themselves, having messages that they have been given or having visions afterward. It's a literal frequency shift. And if you consider just merely the physics All right. I mean, I used to work broadcast, for example.
Okay.
And there were physical affects to working in a broadcast studio and being surrounded, like you see all my gear up around me. Imagine more gear than that and monitors everywhere. When you walk outside, you smell lightning.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, because you've been in an ionized atmosphere for so long. Like,
right.
You smell like the remnants of a Tesla coil. Like, I can taste pennies right now. Like, and that shifts you in a way. And if you were in contact with the technologies that it takes to shift time, shift space, things right. like that, you can bet darn tootin' that there would be residual affect upon your molecules of your body.
Right.
You know, and that you would be shifted closer to that frequency. You know, it fully explains why some people are able to see the object right next to somebody that can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's what we see. That's one of the correlations between the UFO experiencers and the near-death experiencers is these after changes, the after effects that we see in people. And they, you know, span the gamut, but they are consistent between both types of experiencers. And you had mentioned Kathleen Martin. Mm. One of the important things that she found within the ERT survey was that 55% of abductees have had a near-death experience. Yep. Whereas the general population, that drops down to about 5% at best. So why are near-death experiencers then having UFO experiences? And I talk about that later, you know, chapter 8 and 9 of my book about why I believe that we are seeing that correlation there. But whenever I first started noticing it, after I had had my vertebral artery dissection, I had another setback. I ended up back in the hospital and I mean, my blood pressure was 40 over 20. I was not doing good.
Wow.
And so my husband and I were talking about funeral arrangements. And one of the things we discussed was, what do I want to do while I'm still here? And we ended up taking a trip out to Roswell because I was like, well, I've always wanted to go to Roswell. And so he planned it out and we loaded up the kids and it was 2019. We finally drove out to Roswell and went to the big festival. And that's cool. Where I met Kathleen Martin and found out about her being the one that started the Experiencer Resource Team for MUFON. And on the way home, I said, I wonder if MUFON has meetings in Oklahoma. And so we called headquarters and they said, well, there's actually not a chapter there right now. We need people. And so if you're interested, we can get you started as being an investigator. And I said, okay, well, I'm still not in the greatest health, but starting off, most of it was online. So I said, this is a great way I can get involved. I've always wanted to do this. And so I took the leap and joined MUFON and became a field investigator. And then within a year, I was promoted to state director. And then I went on to become dean of MUFON University to try to revamp some of the training for MUFON.
Which so I am so excited
kind of
about.
That's steady climb. Yeah.
Because honestly, and I've got it right here. I've got my Rush Limbaugh. That's right here on my hands, folks. I've got the field investigator manual. And for those of you who wonder, like, oh, you know, maybe it's not a thorough thing. Like, that's two fingers thick, Jack. That is as thick as any textbook for college I had when it came to biology or astronomy or anything like that. And yeah, it goes into forensic data gathering. It goes into how to properly take witness statements. One of the issues, Mindy, is the general availability of field investigator training. So the fact that y'all are taking MUFON University to the next level and to the internet and to digital learning, that's so fantastic. Because otherwise, yeah, you know, like, of course, MUFON Symposium, everybody. I mean, come out to the MUFON Symposium. One of the first day, there is a 7-hour long field investigator training. There are opportunities like that. There are regional field investigator trainings, that kind of stuff, of course. But yeah, it can be hard to become a field investigator in some states, because like you said, Oklahoma didn't have one until recently.
Right. And that really is what got me started on the whole, we need to revamp MUFON University, because the platform it was on is kind of old. It was built, I think, 12 years ago, and it's just been stagnant. And whenever our old director of investigations had to step down due to health reasons, then that training that he was doing was no longer being provided. And so I got with Terry Ling Kill, who's director of membership. She's one of the board of directors and my best friend within MUFON. And we ended up talking for like 6 hours one night. That's the first night that I met her. And we stayed on the phone and just talked about everything. And one of the things that came up was MUFON University. And I said, why can't we take these trainings? Why can't we film them and put them on to MUFON University, revamp it all, and standardize all of the training and do a case walkthrough, show people how to actually investigate UFOs. And that's where that got started. And our executive director gave us the green light. And so for the last year, that's what we've been working on. And at the symposium, we'll finally be able to release it to our state directors, and all of our field investigators will be able to go through it. Super excited.
I cannot wait for the official release. That's going to be so incredibly awesome for you guys. And
oh yeah,
it's great to see that once again, because one of the conversations I've had with a few people is the fact of, for instance, I'm a fourth degree Knight of Columbus. Any chapter I go to, they love me, Mindy. You know why? Because I'm under the age of 70 and I'm a Knight of Columbus. It tends to be populated with like the older crowd of folks that are going out at the church, you know, that are unfortunately, going out of circulation. So they look at me and they see young blood. They see somebody that can bring in 30, 40 year olds. You know, that can bring in a whole new conversation. And it's fantastic to see people like you going out, attending things like the Oklahoma Horror Convention and having a table there. In all sincerity, because that is where the conversation's moving. And there is a huge conversation with people there. And the fact that you are actively bringing it out to the general public, you know.
Well, in the younger crowd, like you said, it's within MUFON, we have so many seasoned investigators, and these people are incredible. They know the ins and outs and of, you know, investigating UFOs, but they don't necessarily understand the newer technology. And so that's some of the things. It's so wonderful. Some of the new people that have been coming in and bringing in these new ideas and ways to reach the public and ways to reach the younger generations and get them excited about it. I think that there's so much energy around it right now with everything that's coming out in Congress and what we're seeing in DC. People are just coming out in droves. Our database is just exploding. Here in Oklahoma, the cases just keep rolling in and rolling in and rolling in because people want to talk about it now. And it is a wonderful thing to see, because we can only learn from every single one, even if it happened back in 1965.
Yeah.
Every report teaches us something. And so they're always welcome. And it's wonderful to see people now coming out in droves to report their sightings. And some of the things that are being reported now are able to correlate with some of the things that were in our database from years back.
That's just it, folks. Hey, James Cloud, Reverend James Cloud, he's a guest on our show regularly. An exorcist. He had a sighting when he was like 13 that he recently went and reported to MUFON. and gave him his case and gave him his sighting. He's finally gotten to the point where he's like, yeah, I need to share this. And it may take a lifetime, people. It may, you know, people like Sev, it took a decade almost.
Yeah.
Between experience and being okay to talk about it with other people. And fortunately, yes, that gap is growing smaller and smaller, Mindy, because of resources like the Experiencer resource team, because of resources like MUFON, because of resources like the internet and Facebook groups. One of the things we talk about regularly with Michael J.S. Carter is like within certain communities, within certain racial communities, these things are very anathema to talk about. You know, like you will be shunned by your community, period.
Yeah.
If you talk about it, much, much less go about writing a book about it or anything like that. So it can be hard for people to come forward. And but even though you are doing it 10 years later, it doesn't mean that an account to MUFON doesn't help support other accounts that were given at the same time as your report that may have been waiting for another person from who saw it from the East instead of everybody who saw it from the West. You know,
I'll tell you, I have a perfect example.
Please.
There was the Miracle Mountain Schoolyard encounter that happened. It was actually shown on Ancient Aliens earlier this year. And this case came into MUFON in 2021. It was case number 116768. I have that completely memorized because it's probably the biggest case that has come in. And it was something that happened back in the 1970s. And this was a big schoolyard encounter. There were 17 witnesses there, a boarding school over in southeastern Oklahoma in a small town called Hartshorne. And living, growing up here in Oklahoma all my life, I had never heard of Hartshorne until I saw this report. And finally, after all these years, one of the students came forward to report what had happened there, where they saw a large craft hovering in the distance for a couple of hours, and it slowly moved close to them, and it hovered over a group of trees right in front of them. And the kids were running around scared, and there were two adults there, which was the teacher and the mother of several of the students there, the Buchanan family. I believe they had 11 children. And so those were the two adults, those two women, and then the rest, 15 of them, were children. The oldest boy was so scared, he grabbed a shotgun and climbed up on top of the school and aimed it at the UFO. And when he did that, it flipped up on its side and took off and landed about a mile and a half away over by the sawmill, which was still on the schoolyard property. They owned over 6,000 acres there. And they got the kids inside. The kids were all riled up and everything. And the oldest boy watched as the dome on the top of it seemed to open up, and it ejected all these little balls of light. And the teacher actually saw that happening. And she said they just zipped off into the night sky. Well, they end up going into the schoolhouse. They all lived there. It was a boarding school. And she said that the kids were so scared. There were kids hiding under the bed. She was trying to pull them out, and they ended up sleeping in the living room by the fireplace while the oldest boy stood guard with his rifle, because they were seeing something outside of the window that was like shape-shifting. They couldn't tell exactly what it looked like, but there was some kind of entity out there, and it was banging on the walls and everything. And she said sometime during the night, all the sounds of nature came back, and then they knew it was over. And so the next day they took a field trip up to try to see if they could find it, and they didn't find anything. But when they came back, they realized that the outdoor meat locker had been completely emptied of two sides of beef. But the next day it was strangely returned. So this is processed beef that was taken and then returned the next day. And I guess the school owner, Mr. Buchanan, hauled it all out in the middle of the field and burned it and said, we're not eating that.
Yeah.
And
smart
so
guy.
This was the entire encounter that happened there.
Wow.
So what ended up happening, I took this investigation to the fullest extent I could. I ended up closing it as an unknown aerial vehicle. And then I continued looking into Hartshorne. And as I was, I kept coming across a name, Hayden Hughes. And he ran the International UFO Bureau here out of Oklahoma City. And he started it back in 1957. And he was on site in Hartshorne. There were sightings that were happening. I now have taken over the entire International UFO Bureau. His wife, Bonnie, has generously gifted me all of his files, and I've been pouring through them. Yeah. And Hayden was incredible. He was an incredible investigator. And I am just so grateful for everything that I have now, because it is corroborating everything that was said by these kids that happened back in the 70s. And it started in this small town. There's only about 2,000 people that lived there, and they had hundreds of sightings between the 60s and 70s. They had over 100 sightings just within 1 8-month period during the 60s. And so we're uncovering all kinds of accounts now that are serving to corroborate what this schoolyard encounter had uncovered. And this is just the case that just keeps going and going and going, because there's so many other cases linked to it.
Wow.
And I see you showing there with Hayden. He did the Heaven's Gate stuff I was telling you.
Yep.
I ended up getting tape recordings of him interviewing some of the cult members and with Applewhite and Nettles, which they went by the two, or they sometimes were called Bo and Peep. Mm-hmm. And they came in and visited with Hayden Hughes and Brad Steiger several times here at the International UFO Bureau in Oklahoma City. Yeah. And there are several tape recordings of them speaking. There's a lie detector test, which they passed. And, you know, we know what they ended up going on to do, but,
you know,
Hayden was almost convinced.
It's interesting, Mindy. We spoke about that not too long ago on this show, the Heaven's Gate. And, I just watched the whole documentary and I sat with my wife and that was happening. I remember the contacts happening here in Texas before they went and moved. It was right up around the same time as David Koresh and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Dallas right as they moved out. Wild stuff. And I sat with my wife and watched that, and she was like, my God, I can't believe that they did that. And I was like, how? I can't believe you can't believe they did that.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it made perfect sense.
Had suspected they were moving in that direction. And Hayden actually talks about several strange run-ins that he had with them where they seemingly vanished. There was one where Applewhite actually gave him a thought code sequence. And he said, if you ever want to contact us, send out this thought code sequence in our direction. And so he tried it 14 months later. And the next day he got a call.
Whoa.
And he tried it again. And they called him again and said, we received your communication. And so they had some kind of abilities that they were tapping into. But obviously it doesn't, you know, support what they ended up going on to do.
No,
but
no.
I've been keeping an eye.
I don't. And once again, I do not espouse what they did. But
right.
But as far as true believer goes, I can feel why they did what they did when they did it. Because yes, they were absolute true believers in what they believed.
They were,
and what their experience was, and even to see once again, because the one thing that all of these experiences have in common, paranormal wise, Mindy, is alienation, and the feeling of alienation afterward. The feeling that once again you are the only one solely with this experience, and It used to be a different world for those suffering the PTSD of one of these experiences. finding a support group, finding a group of like-minded individuals. I mean, once again, hey, you may not even have a MUFON chapter in your state, you know? So where do you go for help? Where do you go to find somebody of like mind, of like experience, you know? And that's hard. And it can be very, very hard to process things. Now, your experience UFO UAP wise, let's get into that real quick and how it connects to your near death experience, Mindy.
Okay. I know we're getting short on time. We're right
at
the hour.
That's okay. I mean, that is up to you. The conversation is great. We are not hard on an hour. That is why I pre-record my second guest. So we can always go longer than an hour. That is firmly up to how much time you have. So
perfect. Well, I was going to say with on the Heaven's Gate front, let me wrap that up really quick.
Yes.
Ed Steiger actually went on to write a book called Inside Heaven's Gate, which they talk about all their time with the cult members and kind of their revelations and working with them. So I would highly recommend that to anybody that's interested still in Heaven's Gate and just how kind of, you know, cults are formed and how that ended up playing out. But Hayden was, you know, the number one expert on them. For the most part, I mean, he worked with them intently. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. Sorry you own that.
It's not an actual patch, folks. Just so you know, it's not like I went on some morbid eBay auction. There was a company that I found that had made them. And I was like, oh, well, I've got to get one of those. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to say,
I
they
had my
actually...
away team patch ready.
Oh, my goodness. I have been keeping an eye on them lately. There was a gentleman named Swody that there were two of them that stayed behind to run the website. So the Heaven's Gate website is still up and going. And then Swody, he has a female friend. I'm not quite sure what her name is, but I believe that they're trying to kind of reorganize now. And way that they had their meeting set up, they were set up on the stage just like Applewhite and Nettles used to set up theirs. So
now I know what my tomorrow is all about, Mindy.
Okay.
I've got to track them down and have them
digging
on the show. Because to know that, well, I mean, I am open-minded. I myself have had some wild experiences in my life that I cannot, I cannot explain. They led me down spiritual paths in the world. It's what led me to join the seminary was a moment of ecstatic faith and being in true presence of what I know to be my God. And sharing that with people who I figured would be of like mind and very supportive of my experience. Not so much.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it wasn't their shared experience.
Yeah, people have a hard time comprehending if they haven't had these kind of encounters. But like I said, whenever I started speaking about it, people were so open to me. And I don't know if it's the authenticity that they see or what, or just the pain, you know, maybe people don't want to offend me. But I was lucky to find MUFON and wonderful camaraderie there with people that had experienced things differently than I had, but they understood the fear that came with it. They understood the changes that your mind undergoes afterwards and the searching and trying to put together this huge complex puzzle of the universe. It opens up every question known to man.
Yeah.
So, you have to find somewhere to belong. That would be interesting for you to speak with them. I know with Heaven's Gate, they really took off after a big meeting. They had in Oregon, and that's where a lot of people ended up joining. They saw something in Applewhite that they wanted to follow.
Absolutely.
And they followed it to the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, once again, there was never a message of any kind of harm or, you know, it never really even any force to keep anybody there. Like, you want to go? Yeah. There are people, Swobody even came and went. Like a couple times, went, stayed back with his family for a year or so, then went back, you know, with open arms and love. So, yeah.
Is he the one that brought his sister back with him?
Yep. And to see those that are left behind, who are in a state of hard question, Mindy.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that you were when you were in the void on the other side in a state of hard question.
Yeah.
Doubting everything that you knew to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a hard place to be. Like I have been there. And that's why I want to have the conversation, not out of any morbid curiosity or things like that, but out of that conversation comes an understanding. Out of that conversation comes an empathy, hopefully, where we can find a connection point in our own life to further understand this, to further understand the phenomenology of not only how that happens, but how one finds faith. How one defines faith, period, because their belief in their faith in that, I'm sorry to tell you, folks, it's no different than your faith going in on a Sunday afternoon or a Wednesday evening, you know, like, or a Saturday afternoon if you're of that faith. Like, there's no difference. It's an interesting phenomenology of thought.
It is.
And
hopefully if you do reach out to them, there can be some kind of comfort found for the families that were left behind, because it was such a tragedy that they would follow their beliefs to that end. That happened right as I was graduating high school. Mm. And I remember just the shock of it. I had never seen anything like that, you know, in my young life.
Yeah, and it was, and that's just it. There were quite a few right there in a row. Where it was just like, that world was just kind of laid open to us of, I guess, adjacent and adjunct thought.
Yeah.
You know, of mainstream belief.
So it's so interesting. It's interesting to be revisiting it this many years later and reading through Hayden's files and just kind of his thoughts on everything. They were very convincing. You know, for him to be the educated man that he was really searching for, you know, what's going on with these people that, you know, they seem to have some kind of ability here, but. Yeah, and there's Applewhite there. Yeah. You can tell that, you know, something was different with him.
Oh, and when you watch his videos, it's pretty interesting and remarkable. Some of the things that they get into, Bo and Peep.
They believed what they were saying. Like I said, they passed the lie detectors, so they believed it wholeheartedly. And I think that's why they were able to convince so many people, because they actually believed it for themselves. Mm. So
now, we do have you for a little while longer. Let's get into your UFO experience, Mindy. And once again, how it connects to the world of NDE, how it connects to your near-death experience.
Right. Shortly after I became involved with MUFON, I came across CE5, or what some people may call HICE, which is human-initiated contact events. And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe this is all phony, but let me try it, because I was very skeptical. And to my surprise, first time I went out to try to do a HICE event, just, you know, me and my family out in the front yard on our lawn blankets and lawn chairs sitting out and whatnot, just looking at the night sky, I just quietly kind of decided, okay, well, let me try to reach out and do kind of like a heist thing. And immediately there started being these flash bulbs in the sky, and I had my compass out and everything. And so I started noting, you know, this is at this azimuth, this elevation. And there were about five of them in a row that just flash, 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 flash. And I was just dumbfounded that something happened so quickly. And that was the only time that I saw something like that. I have never seen an actual craft. I'm never had any kind of encounter like that. But the flash bulbs was the first thing that happened. And I thought, why was that so easy? And I went on to take on some cases. One of the cases I investigated through MUFON was a young man that called himself the UFO magnet. And he had captured a picture of,
hey, Joey,
a UFO.
How you doing?
Oh, I guess you know him.
Oh, I know Joey. He was tuned in earlier.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Joey's good people.
He is a fantastic human being.
Awesome. I'm glad you know him. So Joey, he had come and then reported a case. And so I investigated it. And it was during the wintertime. So I waited till it warmed up just a bit. And we had planned on getting together for a sky watch. And so we ended up meeting up in northeastern Oklahoma, up on this hill. And there were a few of us investigators there. One of the investigators is a lifelong experiencer, and he was there. And so throughout the night, we had our telescope set up and, binoculars and all of this, and saw a couple of strange lights in the sky that we weren't able to identify immediately. And I said, okay, well, it's been a nice night. It was probably nearing midnight. So we started packing up everything and started about to head down the hill. And right as we packed up everything, then, wait, let me see here. I lost you.
Oh, no, I'm here.
I'm sorry. Okay. I was messing around on my computer and you minimized. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So we were packing up, and as we were standing there, we were talking, and one of the investigators that was a lifelong experiencer, abductee, he was talking with Joey about birds. And he said, it's really interesting, the connection with owls. And Joey said, well, I actually have a connection with cranes. He had had an instance where a crane had, tried to fly into his apartment one time. And we were discussing this. And then Joey said, look, and he points and we all turn. And, about 15, 20 feet away from us, there's these power poles, and this sandhill crane flies between the wires of the power pole and then swoops down about 10 feet directly over our head. And when you're looking up at this thing, you see its legs hanging down. You see all of the individual feathers. You could see the colors of the feathers, and it was right there above us. And these sandhill cranes, they have a wingspan of 7 foot.
Yeah.
So this thing is larger than a full grown man hovering 10 feet over our head. And so it comes over us and it swoops up and it flies about 60 or 80 feet away into broad open sky. And then it just blinks out of existence. It just vanished right in front of us.
Wow.
And we stand there and we're just watching, and your brain's trying to comprehend and catch up to what just happened, because there's no trees or anything for it to duck behind or anything. This thing was up in midair and is still huge in our view. You think of a 7 foot structure about 60, 80 feet away from you. It's large. And so this thing was there was nowhere for it to go. And so we just stood there for several seconds and then just gasped. Like we were waiting for it to come back or, what it was going to do.
Man.
And we just kind of went, wow. Okay. Well, that was different. And that's the most spectacular thing I have ever seen. And I've said it before, my brain still tries to wrap around what I saw. When I'm telling you this right now, I don't fully believe it because it was so bizarre. My brain still cannot wrap around what I witnessed. And I know I saw this bird because there were five other witnesses there. Everyone else saw it too.
and you know, I had an experience. My buddy Billy, shout out to Billy Stewart out there from high school. I'm still best friends with my best friend from high school. And we had a shared experience many years ago. We used to get together at New Year's Eve at a friend's house. And you know, it's New Year's Eve. You're in your 20s. You do what you're doing. Like we go out on the, go out on the bayou and pop fireworks and drink whatnot, drink some more and whatnot some more, you know? But right next door to my friend's house was another guy that we went to high school with, Ari. Ari was on the spectrum, Mindy, on the very high order of the autistic spectrum. Very functional, but at the same time, very dissocial.
Right.
Now, Ari had an incredible memory, such to the fact that he would call the astral world payphone numbers from our high school cafeteria. He would call other high school cafeterias and just talk to whoever picked up. He had the phone numbers to all of the malls in Houston. Memorized.
Wow.
That's the kind of memory that was on Ari. Now, one night, one New Year's Eve, we were walking back from getting beer, things like that. And we were looking up and there was just, and this is the true definition of UFO and why I will never go beyond the definition of just unidentified object that was flying. I don't know what it was. It had no shape. It was not shiny, didn't have lights. It was just like this amorphous mass that was moving through the sky and blotting out stars as it moved. And then it vanished. And I mean like the size of a house in the sky. Huge, huge.
Wow.
And we were all like, did you see that? Oh, man, you know, there's some things involved tonight. Who knows? The next year, we went for our New Year's tradition. We went to Jason's house, fireworks loaded, beer ready. Ari's face pops over the fence. Hey, guys, what's going on? Nothing much. Man, you think you're going to see something in the sky like we did last year? Oh, my God. That was real. Because we thought maybe, hey, you know, we were all on some pretty decent stuff. But when the sober person on the spectrum who has the Rain Man memory remembers seeing the object and describes it, all of our jaws hit the floor. All of them. Now, granted, one of us was... you know, he had had a few beers, but wasn't crazy. Two of us were pretty lit, no doubt. But it was Ari's memory that brought us all to ring the bell of like, oh my God, that actually happened.
Yeah.
Until then, it was like, man, you remember that night that we were so jacked up, we saw that stuff? And that's how we saw it until that moment. And now my buddy just wrote a story about it, all kinds of things. And we just got to talking about it again. But in a different light of, wow, what was that? What was that?
Now you have that confirmation.
Yeah. And it's strange to look back on things once again, many years later and try not to have formed opinions. You know, to try to keep an open mind. But at the same time, to be able to have that open conversation with my buddy is fantastic. To know that we had that shared experience, but we are neither ashamed nor afeared to talk about it together is great. Because unfortunately, that is so frequently not the case. As we were discussing earlier, you even had the crisis of conscience as to whether or not to tell your husband about your near-death experience. What does your husband think about your involvement with MUFON and with your UFO experience? Is that your sole UFO UAP experience and sighting, Mindy?
Well, and you know, I do not share. I have had another encounter, but I don't share it publicly.
That's okay.
But it was much more in depth, just for personal reasons. But I have gone on to have contact, a close contact experience.
Following the CE5 protocol?
No. Okay. No. This was something other. But I did have a close contact experience. After about a year of investigating, so this would have been in 2020 that this transpired, and I haven't really had anything since. But we find that there is such a huge connection between people that have had these near-death experiences, and then they go on to have contact experiences just like I have. And there was a definite progression of, you know, how close it got to me. But following that, here in the last few years, I really haven't had much activity. I have more, you know, paranormal type stuff with, you know, shadow people and, you know, orbs and stuff lying around our house, which is just kind of commonplace for my family at this point. But it seems like, you know, the phenomena changes. But it still is always ever present around. And as that's happened, I mean, my husband now has witnessed the shadows. He's witnessed the orbs. Oh. He's witnessed some of these things.
Oh.
And yeah, whereas he never saw these things before.
How now does he feel about them?
He's unbothered.
If you don't mind sharing, I'm sorry.
No, he's unbothered. I mean, okay. He's kind of fascinated by it. And I mean, he trusts me. He trusts my assessment of things. I don't feel threatened by anything that I have encountered. But I keep a positive light around me. And I think that it draws positive experiences. Mm. But he's a 100% believer, and he's completely behind everything that I do.
That's fantastic.
And I mean, he's my biggest cheerleader now. So yeah,
that's great to hear, because it can be rough. Even despite belief, non-belief, acceptance, non-acceptance. When a family member and a loved one steps forward as you have in so many ways, it can be hard and it can be taxing.
Yeah.
So it's good to see that he is fully supportive of you in everything that you do. And has not only that, but because of you, had his own experiences.
Right.
And come
well,
to accept
and as
that.
As much as we speak about my husband, I mean, my children were a huge part of it too. I mean, they're teenagers now. And that's one of the things we had to confront before I put out the book was, how are you going to feel with our lives being out there? And they said, go for it, Mom.
That's awesome.
You know, they're right there too. Their friends are buying the book and they're reading about it and they're, you know, talking to the kids about it and they're, you know, texting them, hey, I'm at chapter 6 and hey, tell me more about this thing that happened. So,
yeah.
I mean, we've just been surrounded by support, and it has just been overwhelming, the love that's poured forth just in the last couple of weeks since the book come out. People are resonating with what's in there, and they understand it, and they are so supportive of everything that I'm doing, and it's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And to know that your family is behind you in the publication of the new book and the telling of your story and the coming out with your story. Because once again,
right.
Folks like yourself, folks like Sev, who are experiencers of these things, who have been touched by these things. There's nobody better for a new experiencer to come in contact with. I have said for years that Sev is hands down one of the best ambassadors out there.
She is.
She sees and understands the full change the understanding that you may be considering your experience through a lens of shame, that you may be experiencing your your experience through a lens of personal suffering that's going on in your life. And that, that when you get that right, your understanding of your experience changes.
It does. You know? She's absolutely right. And she's gone on to help so many people now. Sev is an incredible person and she's doing such wonderful work. I'm so glad that you're getting her on the show and she's able to share her story because people need to hear it.
She was the first experiencer that we ever had on this show, Mindy. And that was probably about 6 months after she released her book. That was back when we were dudes and beer. That was before our before our magnanimous rebrand. But sincerely, the fact that she was even willing to come onto a show like Dudes and Beer and share her extremely personal story, it led to a world of conversations with our audience, and truly was one of the many conversations that helped steal us in the direction that we are going now, from just a discussion show where it was three people and maybe a guest talking about a topic and how it impacts the world around us to digging deep with people like you and with people like Sev about their experience and how that changes and catalyzes a life. That's different than
the
a group of people
it's had on you.
Oh yeah. I mean, even seeing y'all's stories and the way that y'all have processed them, it wasn't too long ago that Michael J.S. Carter and I did a pre-record. I was getting ready for a month on the road. I spent my first year in college as a seminarian, and as I've confessed many times on this show, Mindy, after leaving the seminary, many people have problems. It feels like you have failed yourself, your God, your calling. It's rough. It's not easy. Not everybody treads those waters well. I was one of them that did not. And it was after our conversation, he and I were just talking, and he mentioned the fact of, this is your ministry.
It is.
This is what all of that was leading to. Like, it's fantastic that you learned that lesson and that you learned the regenerative lesson of, oh, wow, I was just supposed to answer the call. Doesn't matter what the end outcome was. I was just supposed to go play the game. That was the important part, was that I listened to begin with. The rest was self-imposed.
Some of us are called to such strange ministry.
It is, how you get there.
It is. There are so many people that are hurting that are not classic Christians or, you know, within any major faith system that still need to have that hope. They need that love. Yeah. You know, they need to hear these messages that there is something more, and you know, the messages of unity and everything that comes out of near-death experiences and UFO encounters. And I absolutely believe that you were called to be led down into this road where a lot of people will not tread. And so thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I mean, it really is the fact of, once again, it's the conversation. If we don't have it, we stymie as a humanity, Mindy. We literally, and we are coming to a point. We are beyond the point of a boiling pot. We are at the point of a roiling cauldron ready to overflow with everything from disclosure to, I mean, even the reality that, this last year, quantum mechanics won the quantum entanglement rather won the Nobel Peace Prize, proving so many things that we are literally talking about, that connection beyond all, you know, and the fact that despite distance or state, we are entangled. All of us.
Absolutely.
Every one of us. So, yeah, yeah. These are big truths to handle that are quite literally being proven by science. Things that religions and fads and philosophies and archetypes have talked about for millennia.
It's wonderful. It's a great time to be alive.
It's a beautiful time to be alive. It's a fantastic time.
It is
a fantastic time to be reading your book. I cannot wait to finish the next couple chapters on my way to MUFON symposium this year. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to find out more about Mindy, where they can go to buy the book, where they can go to register for MUFON University, find out more, and all that good stuff. Shameless right. Self-promotion time.
Great. Well, they can find me at mindytautfest.com. That's MindyTautFest.com. And they want to reach out to me directly. My email is NDE2UAP@gmail.com. And if they're interested in Oklahoma MUFON, they can go to MUFONOK.com. If they're outside of Oklahoma, MUFON.com, if they would like to become a member. And once people get started down the road to being a field investigator and pass the exam, then they will automatically be logged into MUFON University to take all of the new training that'll be available here in the next couple of weeks. The book's available on Amazon and at Barnes and Noble. So either way, the easy way to order it there. Yeah,
absolutely. And we, of course, as always, have embedded your book right there in our store with all of our guest books.
Oh, awesome.
So we make it nice and easy for everybody to find everything. You can always go to curiousrealm.com/store to find that book as well, folks. So, Mindy, thank you so much for your time, for your more than candid conversations tonight. Once again, I feel that's what's necessary with our humanity. That's where we need to be going with this, is being willing to have the hard conversations, being willing to stop and listen with open hearts and open minds. We have tried to convince people of a paradigm for too long, instead of literally just listening to what they believe, why they believe it, and leaving it at that. And experiencing humanity through somebody else's belief, you know, vicariously. Enjoy the fact that somebody else believes differently than you. Rejoice in that. It's great.
Honor that. That's right. Connect with people.
Absolutely.
Let's just love each other.
Yeah. Can't we just all get along?
It's simple. It is. Yeah. That's
once
exactly
again,
it.
Thank you so much for your time. I cannot wait to meet you again at MUFON Symposium this year. That is coming right up August 24th to 27th, folks. MUFONSymposium.com. You can go and get tickets. We are officially a sponsor there. I'll be sending links to all of this to you tonight, Mindy. So thanks again for coming on. I look forward to having you on again and again and again.
Yes. Thank you, Christopher. It was a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Same here. We'll see you soon.
All right.
Take care. Man, incredible conversation with an incredible investigator and experiencer. Once again, we have to be willing to have these conversations. It's not easy. It's not fun. It's not fun to listen to somebody explain how something very personally happened in their life and has changed them and catalyzed them. So I want to thank you, my audience, for always being willing to have that conversation, to take your time to listen to these stories, to listen to these authors and researchers, and having an open heart and open mind. With that in mind, let's have an open heart and open mind for our sponsors. And right after that, we will be talking to our good friend, Sev Talk, the author of You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens, coming up right after this, folks. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that commercial break. Mindy Topfest, such an interesting book, Dying to Meet Them, the the world of NDEs, near-death experience, meeting the world of the UFO UAP experiencer is fascinating to me. And it is interesting to see those things more and more coming together. The science of the research of things, even seeing the recent turn of Kathleen Martin's work, with the experiencer resource team and her kind of spiritual bend on the experience itself. Our guests in this segment are good friend Sev Talk, author of the You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens. She was the MC at last year's UFO Fest, or UFO Fest, MUFON Con in Denver, Colorado. She will be at MUFON Con this year. Welcome back to the show, Sev. How are you doing?
Hi, Chris. Always a pleasure to be your guest on Curious Realm. Thank you.
Absolutely. I always love our conversations. And it is interesting, as we were saying before we started recording, to see the experiencers that have come to David Grusch, people who have experienced other things other than just contact. What do you, as a member of the experiencer resource team for MUFON, how do you think that impacts the world of disclosure right now and the world of the experiencer, Sev, as an experiencer yourself?
Well, at MUFON, we've definitely seen an increase in cases reported. And that's always a good thing. We appreciate everyone who contacts MUFON to share with us what they saw, whether it's just lights in the sky or whether they actually made direct contact with an extraterrestrial being. And that's what the ERT is all about, the Experiencer Resource Team. We deal with people who've made direct contact. And I'm very happy that it's being talked about much more. For those of us who've been doing this work, it feels like things are getting a little easier for us. We still have an uphill battle. There's still a lot of people who don't believe.
Oh, sure.
But now it's so normal to have this on television on your local newscast. I was interviewed by my local newscast on World UFO Day. They reached out to me.
I saw that.
And I just thought that was wonderful. And that is because of the hearings that's happening on TV. So on one hand, we curse the government. But on the other hand, they are helping with disclosure, even though they're not disclosing too much. But there's a little bit there.
Well, they are disclosing as much as you can really expect a government to disclose. As we have said numerous times on the show, you can expect any big D disclosure to directly have to do with funding, to directly have to do with money, funds, what have you. Even when it comes to, as David Grusch said in his testimony, that there is a reverse engineering program out there. Eventually, it comes to the fact of billions, like B's, billions of dollars have been put into these reverse engineering programs. At some point, the technology has to hit a shelf. At some point, you got to utilize the technology. Otherwise,
we probably already have.
Oh, yeah. No, most definitely. And that's just it. You know, the fact of we won't be able to bring out the next really cool weapons of war without disclosing the fact that we have some reverse engineered stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like we got to start with part A. and like they said in the hearing at the beginning, if you're looking for little green men, you're in the wrong place today. I thought that was interesting for them to start that way. Mm-hmm. But I also thought it was great for the opening of NHI and the opening of the conversation of non-human intelligence and of the fact of, yes, there may be some of these crafts, Sev, that like you, in your experience, were piloted by extraterrestrial beings from another location in the star systems. But some of these crafts may very well be interdimensional Maybe cross-dimensional, yeah. Things like that. You know, maybe just automated things. We don't know what intelligence will be in the future. They may be coming from another time, another dimension, all kinds of things. So leaving that open, I think, is fantastic, and leaves a whole fantastic realm of possibilities as to what many of these anomalies are.
Yes. I was really happy that Grush talked about multidimensional beings, and that he was explaining why he used the terminology that he did, because he couldn't really quite say that they were off planet, because maybe they're not from off planet. Maybe they are sharing this planet with us, but in other dimensions that human beings can't see. Well, most human beings can't see.
Yeah. Well, and that is a beautiful point, Seb, that most human beings can't see.
Actually, we all could see a little bit more if we wanted to. We could all see auras and other little things and energy grids in rooms. We can all see that kind of stuff. But we have to know we can see it. Second, we have to want to see it. And third, we have to practice.
And accept the fact that you can see it.
And I teach people to see it. Everyone. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pop up on screen real quick a couple of images from my recent trip to Salem, Massachusetts, one of my favorite cities in the world. But this is a prime example, folks, of exactly what is there just shifted outside of our perspective. Now, here is an actual picture of Proctor's Ledge. This is where they have recently, in the past few years, confirmed the fact that this is where the actual hangings took place of the Salem witch trials. They have built a memorial there called Proctor's Ledge. You can see one stone in the wall for each of those that were persecuted. But what I want to show you is the next image. This is a full spectrum image. This is from an image from a camera, pretty much the same model, that the filters have been stripped from. So the infrared protection filter has been stripped off of it. The UV protection filter has been stripped off of it, and it has been replaced with a piece of clear glass. You can see how literally if you were able to see infrared and ultraviolet, your entire world would look totally different. Greens are not green now. They are brownish red. Everything slightly shifts in perspective. And those are the ranges that are just outside, left and right, of the white light range. What we can see in here, what we see in here, Sev, is a very, very tiny slice of that electromagnetic spectrum.
Yes.
Very tiny slice, like nanometers. It's literally like 350 nanometers is our entire seeing and hearing range. Mm-hmm. As human beings. And it's remarkable to know that there is an entire spectrum outside of that, that is right there. Like this is pretty much the way that like parrots see right here. Like birds, some animals can see into these ranges, things like that. Like your dog, your cat can see into some of these ranges, which, you know, is, hey, maybe why sometimes they're just staring off into oblivion with real, real interest watching something.
Yeah, one time I was at my friend's house. She wanted me to watch her cat while she was on vacation. So her cat and I are sitting on the couch. The cat's on my lap. And we're sitting in her den watching TV, the both of us. And all of a sudden, from the corner of the room, I could feel this intense energy come from the corner of the room, come right towards me and stand right in front of me.
Oh, wow.
And I'm looking at it and I'm looking at the cat, and the cat saw it too. The cat actually watched it from the corner of the room.
Yeah.
All the way and stand right in front of us. And I was so happy that the cat saw it, because that was my validation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not imagine this, but I felt it throughout my entire body too. And it's just kind of hovered there in front of us for a couple of seconds and left, but freaked us both out.
Well, it's interesting though, because we were talking before the show about binaural beats, music. Like, you know, I have just come out with a whole album and things like that. One of the concepts I've been talking about with hosts that I've been guesting with is the idea that our whole body is a receiving antenna. There was a recent study done about how our brain is literally just a big salt and fat transducer. That's all it is.
And is.
And yeah, our bodies are just big saline antennas ready to pick things up. Like you said, you felt that thing, whatever it was, you felt the energy of it.
It was intense. And the cat was just staring at it and staring at it.
And probably with a tail flip or two of interest, you know, but that's just it. Like even when you're talking about a cat purring, there is a range of inside of that purr, that healing range, 7.8, that you can feel, but you can't hear. And it's a really, really low, very like 8 pulses per second range. It's wild. And, to know that people are changed, and it's interesting, to see the work of Kathleen Martin, to see the work of the ERT, Kathleen's new survey, I remember it was right after Kathleen was on a couple times ago that I went to the Remote Viewing Association conference last year and saw Hal Puthoff speak. And he mentioned the exact same case that Kathleen had mentioned on the show, where this person had basically an out-of-body experience with a craft. And as they approached the craft, they touched it and passed through the craft. And Hal went on to explain that this is very much vibrationally related. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you've watched the new Flash movie, the example that I give all the time is the Flash from DC Comics. One of the things he does is phasing, where he actively touches an object like a wall or a locked door and matches the vibrational rate of his atoms to the vibrational rate of that, and then just passes through it. Mm-hmm. But to know that experiences are coming back, and this isn't witness experiencers, folks. This is next level experience. That would be like second kind contact and above. Is that correct, Sev?
Close encounters of the third kind, fourth kind. Yeah.
Third kind, yeah. Where you have direct connect with a craft or being. Mm-hmm. And they are coming back, literally frequency shifted, coming back with now having visions, coming back with now having healing qualities to them. It's remarkable to see this trend now that the research has started coming to bear. And that frequency shift in the individual as the experiencer, I think, is something that we need to be ready to explore. As I mean, we are coming to a point of disclosure. We're coming to a point of, okay, great. The military and government are ready to say, yes, okay, we've known about something in our skies for a very long time. And that conversation is being had by the common person, but getting ready to understand that frequency shift of the individual, that spiritual shift of the experiencer.
The frequency shift manifests in many, many ways.
Explain that, Sev.
Well, when we say a frequency shift, most likely a shift into a higher vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're shifting into a higher vibration, it is believed by many of us that different aspects of your DNA are activated as well. There is more to our DNA than just the physical parts that our scientists can see.
Sure.
We have interdimensional, multidimensional DNA. This could be DNA from the cosmos, DNA from other beings that are included in our DNA. And as your body starts to vibrate at a higher frequency, the higher frequency elements within your body get activated. So what does that mean? Well, all of a sudden you're plugged into higher frequency information. And there's information that resides all around us. Just there's like a soup of information that's always twirling around us, and you can plug into it and you can pull that information. And the higher frequencies, the higher dimensions have information in it that we can call higher frequency information, which benefits us greatly. This is information that helps us adopt a perspective from the higher viewpoint. And as we adopt a perspective from the higher viewpoint, the higher self, try and make decisions for our little earthling lives through the perspective of a higher self, we make better decisions, and we make decisions more aligned with our heart and our purpose for being.
Oh, most definitely. And more in line with how we should be in the society around us. And like you were saying before the show, one of the big issues facing experiencers is alienation. The idea that they alone have suffered this, not only the incident, but the burden of knowledge.
Yeah, isn't it a shame? Because it's the most extraordinary event ever to come face to face with a being from another galaxy, another planet, another star system. And then all of a sudden, it becomes something that victimizes us. It becomes an experience that actually hurts us in some way because we're afraid of it. We don't understand it. We can't share it with anybody. It's the most marvelous experience in the world. And then because of the way society treats it, we get embarrassed.
Yeah.
We get embarrassed for having such an extraordinary experience. It's such a shame. So the reason I'm speaking out is because I don't want experiencers to be embarrassed. I'm not saying write a book. I'm not saying go on TV. But I am suggesting that you come out to yourself, because the longer you hide it, the more it's going to affect your life in very, very adverse ways. Mm. And I speak about this from experience, my personal experience, and also the experience that I have gained from listening to abductees from all over the world who contact me, not only through MUFON, but also personally through my website, planetsev.com.
Yeah, precisely, Sev. And it's not easy for somebody to accept that it happened to begin with, much less to accept that incidence's place in their life. Once again, I make the point all the time. So you think you like want this experience? Feel free to read any of the books on my shelves back here. These are people who, after years, have come to a point of understanding.
Yes.
But when their experience happened to them, very rarely was it like the epiphany experience that was amazing and beautiful and fantastic.
It does happen.
It does. Absolutely.
Abductions were just really very loving and warm and cozy. And a lot of that has to do with your perspective.
Sure.
Because if you are looking at these beings expecting to be victimized and perceive everything they do to you from the lens of victimization, then you will think you had a bad experience.
Sure. And I mean, even you yourself with your own experience with the marks that you found on your body, things like that, you were at the time going through some personal strife issues in your life, relationship wise, things like that, which, as you have disclosed to us in previous very personal conversations on this show, Sev, that definitely colored and filtered your experience.
Yeah, well, what really filtered my experience was, up until a few years ago, I decided that I was going to live my life as a victim. And I thought everybody was doing crappy things to me. And I thought all the bad things that happened to me was done by other people to me. And so when I came across The Grays, I just assumed, well, they're victimizing me just like my ex-husbands did. Everybody just, victimizes me.
Just like everybody does. Yeah.
Yeah. However, when I was 10 years old, I have conscious memory of making of a being coming to visit me for a few years, from 10 to 12. I have conscious memories. That wow. being, however, I did not feel victimized with that being. That being felt like it was my space brother, and I felt a lot of love and non-judgment from that being. So as a little girl, maybe I wasn't walking around with the perception of victimization, and maybe that's why I was able to really appreciate the experiences that I had with that being. It could be not until I started to get older and started to play the game that society has created, that we're all victims, then I adopted it, and then that colored my world.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it covers it colors everything around you. And I mean, any traumatic episode in life will color everything around you, given the opportunity and given the consent by you.
Yeah, so it's always good to plug in. Internal introspection is very necessary.
How many experiencers, just on average, Sev, that you initially contact or that initially contact you are going through that first phase of almost traumatic disbelief in their event? I
would say close to 99%.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's such a deep-rooted feeling. There's really no words to explain how it just cuts through you and completely changes you as a person in that second. You change in a second. And how do you change? Well, there's good changes and there's difficult changes. The good changes, you see the truth about a reality that a lot of people don't see. That's good. And what are you going to do with that truth? You're going to hide it and allow it to bring you down, are you going to embrace it and try and see how that experience can change your life for the better? And I say that in quotes, help you. How can this experience teach you something? With all the experiencers that I have come in contact with, I've come up with five main topics that the ETs tend to share with experiencers, information that they tend to share. And this information that ETs tend to share with experiencers is scientific information about scientific innovation, also about the hybridization program, how to strengthen your own psychic abilities. They give information that's very spiritual in nature that promotes self-empowerment, which the government does not want to be us to be self-empowered, but the ETs are helping us become self-empowered. That's a big thing. And then also the ETs are giving information about potential futures for human beings and for Earth. Those seem to be the five main categories that I've discovered. This is really profound information that we're getting. And then what do we do with this information? We just sit on it. And then we tell ourselves, I can't share this information, but this information is important for all of us to hear.
It's massively important. And it's one of those, whether you believe it or not, even as the experiencer, I think it's important to share, because it provides the adjunct thought for humanity, that we need. We need, without the converso, once again, to loop this back to earlier, without the hard conversations, Sev, we cannot get to the hard truths. We cannot get to the hard realities of things and what we have to do to change as a humanity.
Yeah, well, it all starts with the individual, because you have to have that hard conversations with yourself first, which many of us refuse to do. And so our collective change is going to come through the individual change.
Yeah.
And, or the transformation.
And, you know, one of the conversations that we have regularly with experiencers, especially people like Reverend Michael J.S. Carter, is the idea of when his experience happened. Because you don't only people don't realize that MUFON doesn't just take witness statements that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody realizes that. Like, you may have witnessed something like one of my guests just recently in the last year went and gave MUFON his witness statement of something he saw when he was 13.
We're getting a lot of historic cases, a lot of historic cases. It's very hard to investigate a historic case, but we try. And some cases we just can't. So what we do is we just thank the person for letting us know about that experience. And we put it in MUFON's database, which is important information to have in our database.
Well, and that's just it. When it comes to shape of craft, the circumstances in which they appear, the circumstances in which the person was when it appeared, what mindset were they in? Because once again, it could be the fact that they were just vibrationally aware at that moment. You know, they may have just left church and were in that ecstatic state and were open to something new in their universe, in their life, and bam.
That's a really good way to put it, because sometimes someone will see a craft and the person right next to them does not see it at all.
And that's just it. It's like saying that you would see the same thing with my glasses on, Sev. Literally. It's like, oh, here, give them a shot. I guarantee it'll make you see better. Like, what? That logic doesn't make sense.
Sightings don't happen by accident. There's a reason. If you saw something, there's a really good reason you saw it. Same thing with making contact with an ET. This is a good reason that happened. And so I'm helping people figure out, what's that good reason? It's not just like a one-off, like they accidentally made contact with you. Yeah. There's something there for you to benefit from.
Yeah. And you know, the idea that experiencers share once again is hard. Like we were saying, the conversation that we have with people like yourself, Michael J.S. Carter, is the fact that for decades there was nowhere. Where were you going to go? How were you going to find people? Like, maybe you found a pull tab on the backboard of a library or a church meeting somewhere that, like, hey, have you seen something weird in the skies? Come to this meeting. Like, ooh, cool. I'm going to put that in my wallet and go.
But now there's no excuse. If you want help, you can get it.
Well, the thing is, not only has the conversation opened, but the help channel has opened. The group channel has opened. Yeah. The idea that you are no longer alone in your experience has opened, and that has opened a whole realm of healing for people such as yourself and other experiencers, Sev, that all of 5-10 years ago, despite the internet, did not exist in the way it does now. Mm-hmm. And until the internet, and until bulletin board systems, even once again, how did you even find a community of like-minded individuals who had an experience outside of maybe a local MUFON meeting, if you even knew of MUFON's existence?
Right. Yes, it was definitely much tougher. And I went through that time because when my experiences started, there was no internet.
Yeah. Well, and how has that been for you to not only come to the point in your experience journey, Sev, that you are helping people? Mm-hmm. As part of the resource team, and a fantastic and magnanimous advocate for experiencers everywhere. I love everything that you do for experiencers. It is great to see all of the work that you, from the point of view releasing your book, what is it, 6-7 years ago now almost?
It's been 5 years.
Yeah. Close to 5 years. I know it was shortly after it came out that I had you on Dudes and Beer. and we have been friends since. We talk outside of the show, things like that. And to see your journey of not only personal healing, but helping others find that journey and find their footing. It's beautiful, Seth. It's fantastic. It is fantastic, and it is empowering, and it should be empowering to every single experiencer out there that this is the possibility for you. You can live a happy, fulfilling life despite your experience, even if it was traumatic for you.
Yes, as long as you are willing to pop out of the victim vibe. And that's not an easy thing to do. That takes a lot of self-introspection. It takes a lot of a personal growth, a personal journey inside, and to look at aspects of yourself that you might not want to encounter.
Yeah.
And that is what ET contact does. It takes you to those places and asks you to look at maybe the dark resources, the dark recesses within you, and shine a light on it, admit it, look at it, heal it, and move on. That's why ET contact is so profoundly, exceptionally important, because the information, the help that they give us is spiritual in nature and does promote self-empowerment. Oh. We all want to be fulfilled. We all want to feel like we're living, activating our purpose. We all want to feel like we are giving back to the community, and that we are comfortable. And that we're nurtured, and that we can freely express.
And
we don't want to suffer. And so ET contact can actually help you mentally shift, so that way of life can become your reality, because it takes a mental shift.
It's a massive mental shift. I can only imagine. I mean, I know the experiences I had, and the path that led me down, and even the path of experiences afterward, and my personal feeling of rejection and failure after leaving the seminary. And I know numerous other seminarians that after they left, like they battled hard with a feeling of personal rejection and personal failure, which is totally self-imposed, utterly self-imposed. Like What calling did you not answer? You answered the call. You went and checked it out. Like, you went and played the game.
Yeah, and then decided it wasn't for you. And
you know, like, yeah, it's okay. But yes. It's wild how much we put on ourselves and how long we can carry that as a trauma with us. When it, like you're saying, it doesn't necessarily have to be a moment of trauma. And you may have utterly been viewing your experience through a lens of trauma because of things going on in your life outside of that circumstance.
Yes, right. And I'm so glad I shifted that. I'm so glad I saw that.
Yeah.
And so now
I
have the victimization perspective to the best of my abilities. I believe that I do not perceive through that lens anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. And it's once you can escape that lens of victimization in life, and really kind of learn to revoke your consent from that system. Mm-hmm. It is amazing the amount of emotional freedom you get from just being able to treat something like Velcro, where you can just kind of pull it off and shed it and it's all right. Now with that in mind, one of the conversations that we have regarding experiences regularly, Sev, is, and especially with things like near-death experience, with things like ET contact experience, is what about those that came back without a message? You know, everybody has this concept, this idea of like when you have a near-death experience, that there's a white light at the end of the tunnel, and you go and you experience love, and you met your dog and he gave you this message to change your life, and you came back with new mission. There is a great majority of people out there that didn't happen. I had a very good friend who recently guest on this show, and I asked him, like, he died. Like, it was cardiac arrest. He didn't have a fibrillation incident or anything like that. He suffered cardiac arrest. He was dead. They brought him back. He is one of those that went through that experience but came back with no grand message, came back with, and I mean, he's not lost because he's amazed at the science that they were able to revive him and bring him back. But it's one of those that people have this misconception that, oh, wow, you had a near-death experience. And not even near death. Like, he had a death experience. It wasn't even near death. Like, he died and they brought him back. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't that shared experience that so many people have. There wasn't that feeling of mission and purpose when he came back. You know, there wasn't like a grand message that he was given. What about those that have had the ET experience and had that contact? And once again, maybe haven't had a message given to them or anything like that, or at least one that they can cipher anyway.
Yeah, usually there is a message. Mm-hmm. If you don't remember one, it could be just that you don't remember one. Mm-hmm. And maybe some regression might help you if you're interested, but there's always a lot of caution with regression. That's something to talk about later if you want to.
Well, I was going to say, how often is regression actively used in the work of the ERT team? Because it is, I mean, I've gone through regression. Terry Lovelace actually put me through regression on the show. We recorded a regression session and then I aired it. It was pretty wild. But how often is the work of a regression therapist used by the ERT to try and find out more information if somebody feels like maybe something else happened, like lost time, things like that?
I'd like to answer that question, but first I just want to bring up one more thing about the previous question.
Oh, sure.
That if someone feels like they made contact and they didn't get a message and they insist, no, they didn't say anything to me, I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you still learned a lot. You still have a different perspective of what reality is. Mm. You still know things that most other people don't know. You still experience something absolutely spectacular. So what are you going to do with that information? So it's still a learning.
Sure, sure. There's still a message to be gleaned.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Precisely. And I mean, that is that true experience of life situation. There's always a message to be gleaned if you're willing to look for one. Yes. There are some people that come back from these experiences and they're lost because they didn't have what people would consider to be the quintessential experience.
Well, and it could also be that they don't remember.
Sure.
So we have to realize that too, because a lot of these experiences, a lot of it is just kind of hidden in your mind for a while. I am sure I don't remember all and everything about my experiences. Mm. And it could very well be that as I do the spiritual work on myself and as I raise my frequency, it could be that all of a sudden I have these aha moments with information that is of a higher frequency. So when my body matches the frequency of that information, I'll remember it. And that's what we call an aha moment, because all information, all knowledge, everything we need to know is in us. And if you don't align with the frequency of that information or that knowledge, you don't know it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting how it all results back to frequency.
Forever and always.
That is just physics, and it's absolutely wild. Because I mean, right now we are sharing a frequency shell of electrons via distance, Sev. You know, like we'll see each other in a few weeks at MUFONCon, but right now we're still sharing a vibrational electron shell. Like every bit of that has been proven. And even now with quantum entanglement winning the Nobel Peace Prize, like any concept of saying that ESP or remote viewing or anything like that is pseudoscience is out the window.
Well, if our government's studying it, they're not going to waste money.
They spent a lot of money.
And it's not just our government. It's governments all around the world. Yeah. So come on, wake up. Government doesn't waste its time and spend billions of dollars on something that it doesn't think it's real.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They'll gladly make that fake paper trail to make somebody think that it's real. But yeah, it's they spent a lot of money researching that. And Mr. Putoff, one of the main people involved, is still read onto a lot of things, mainly because as cursory as they are, they're utterly related, you know, like once again, that idea of frequency and vibration and the person, one person seeing a craft and the person right next to them, not, you know, is utterly a vibrational filter.
Yes. So I work a lot with my clients on how to raise their frequency. And I suggest that if anybody wants to make contact with an ET or any kind of being in the other dimensions, it's important to run around in that playground of consciousness, is what I call it, where all beings exist. It's important that you are making friends with high frequency beings. And just like on Earth, you can see how low or high your frequency is on Earth by just looking at your reality, by looking at your friends and just looking at the kind of life that you have. And so the same thing when you're out in the playground of consciousness looking for new friends, you will align with high frequency beings. If you have a higher frequency, you will align with low frequency beings, which we call scary, if you are running around with a low vibe.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And you know, it is that true sense of like attracts like. It's one of the only times where it actively works opposite of physics is, if you are in a low negative place, like it's surprising how fast you will attract low negative people.
That's right.
And just stay there and be comfortable and be okay with it.
That's right. A lot of people don't know how to raise their frequency. I have a YouTube channel, Alien Spirit.
Yeah.
And I offer free, I created 3 videos to help you raise your frequency. And at the end, I created meditations with my voice and with high frequency music to help you connect to the other frequencies, to help you connect to the other beings if you want. Whether it be an ET, a spirit guide, a dead person, you can connect with any being that you want, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with that in mind, like I was just showing on screen, I have all of our guest stuff embedded, folks. If you're looking for the content of Sev Talk's channel, just go to curiousrealm.com/videos and scroll down. You will see her channel embedded right there on the page. All you have to do is click it. It'll take you there. You can like, subscribe. Make sure that you subscribe to her stuff. She puts out fantastic and not only informative, but very empowering things. Like you're saying, the concept of raising your vibration, it's foreign to a lot of people. But it really does come down a lot to the revoking your consent and realizing the fact that our brains, unfortunately, and fortunately, are wired for negativity, Sev. In the sense that you're going to learn faster that fire is hot than because it burns you, then you will how to make fire and the necessity to make it. These are things that have kept us alive and helped us survive for millions of years, you know. And sadly, they are things that can also rule our mentality, you know? There's a reason why something positive feels great, but something negative affects you 10 times more.
Something positive can like be absolutely ecstatic.
Oh, sure. So. Absolutely. But we for some reason are trained to live in the negative, to not quote, be deserving of the positive. as you were saying a while ago, kind of living that victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a secure place. It's a place where we feel secure. It's a place where it's a false sense of security.
Yeah, we're not taking any personal responsibility as if we play the victim role. Yeah. No personal responsibility. So we're just always pointing the fingers at everybody else, every other organization, every other institution, every other government. It's all them, them, them. How can you do that to me? And that is really a very difficult way to live. It's hard to get ahead that way, too, because you don't feel like you have any control over yourself.
Yeah. And that's exactly the point that I was trying to make. And how can people start to, I guess, change their vibration on a daily, you know, because it's not an overnight thing. I think that's a lot of what discourages people, Sev. Kind of the idea of there's a difference between making a wish and manifesting.
Yes,
there is. You know, manifesting is a long road. And just because you pray for something doesn't mean that your prayer wasn't answered. It just may not have been answered in the exact way that you wanted.
Yes. That's why I say that if there's something that you want, let's go for the feeling of it, not the thing of it.
Yes.
What feeling does that car give you? Well, because it's not just that car that'll give you that feeling. Many other things can give you that feeling too. You're going after that feeling, not really that car. So let's figure out the feeling that you want to experience and have. Focus on that and then allow other things to come to you aligned with that feeling. It might not be a car. It might be something else.
Oh, we'll get to the car.
It might be another car. It could be a house. Yeah. It could be whatever. It could be something else.
The car, the house, it'll all happen, but it ain't going to happen tomorrow.
Well,
and you've got to have a realistic vision trail there. You know, like it's small baby steps and learning to see and accept the positivity in small things every day. You know,
you have to put in the work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the work does yield results. It's not a waste of time.
No.
And so you would ask, how can someone raise their frequency day by day? The first step is just to be aware that you have frequency, that you are frequency. And then the second step is to have the desire to raise your frequency. It can be done in so many different ways. What kind of books do you read? Do you read books about murder and death? What kind of TV shows do you watch? Is it all about these hospital shows where people are dying or people are being killed or other shows, these cop shows? I mean, there's just so much murder and death on TV. These video games, what kind of video games are you playing? Are you exploding people's heads? What kind of food are you eating? Are you eating low vibe food, which tends to be packaged and processed? Also animals. Animals carry, if you're eating animals, you are ingesting a lot of bad things, not only from a vibrational viewpoint, but also from a chemical viewpoint. What kind of music are you listening to? Are you listening to music that is soothing and positive and loving? Or are you listening to music degrading women and talking about killing cops? So it's all of that. And you can just keep on going with that. And just if you're paying attention to that, I'm not going to read that book because that book's all about murder. Why do I want to read that book, infuse myself with the energy of murder and fear and death, and then radiate that, and then make that frequency that exists on Earth even stronger. And that's what we're doing every time we are feeding that death and fear vibration on our planet. Every time we read something, play a game, watch something that supports that.
No, absolutely. And, music especially, that's a huge one. I listen to a lot. I mean, hey, just earlier this morning, I was listening to the album Vulgar Display of Power by Pantera. on occasion, I have things that I need to just release and get out. And that is when I listen to that music. And it's funny because there was just a study done not too long ago that people who listen to heavy metal regularly are more mentally balanced on average. And I was like, as someone who worked metal night, I could see that. Because for a long time in my life, Sev, I was an in-house audio engineer for clubs. Like, that's what I did. I lived vibration every night between the stage and my booth. And it was funny to see the vibe difference between Grateful Dead night on Wednesday and heavy metal night on Thursday. The utter crowd switch and switch of people. But at the same time, the same camaraderie, the same, like, yeah, everybody's dancing at the Grateful Dead night. They're pit dancing at the heavy metal night, but at the same token, yeah, they may have just been in the pit together, but outside having a butt, they're having hugs and talking and having a conversation. It was a stress relief for them, not a point of violence. You know, and it was really, really interesting to see that didactic on a weekly basis and see those two communities back to back. And really have that inside view that, yeah, not a lot of people, unless you're in the community, you may not be there, you know, like most of those people for that were there for heavy metal night did not come in on Grateful Dead night. You know, what? And most of the people from Grateful Dead night, there were a couple that were just, hey, man, they were bar regulars, like open mic night didn't matter. They were at the bar, you know. Yeah. But at the same token, it's how you associate that vibe and what you do with that vibe. Because, yeah, if you let anything rule you, it can utterly muddle everything in your life. So yeah, you have to be careful and you have to be measured, especially if that's something like music is a big one for me. I listen to a lot of very calming stuff. I am an anxious person. My events like MUFON Con and things like that, I'm not anxious at those typically because I'm working in some aspect.
Yeah.
You know, I typically don't just go to a crowd of 5,000 people just to hang out. That's not my vibe. You know, it's very muddled vibe for me and very emotional. Like it can be hard for me to focus on me and not be encroached upon by all that. Like when I go into a shopping store, like I have a mission and I am in and out of the store. I'm not going in to browse and hang around the mall and things like that. Like, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. It's too much energy. It's too much energy for me. So I have to realize that about myself, you know, and we all have to realize that it's strange how, by society's rules, we've kind of forgotten that we are responsible for the energy that we drag into a room, Sev.
Yes. I would like to say something.
Please.
A little bit more along those lines of victimization and being a highly sensitive person, because many, many times my clients tell me, oh, I'm very sensitive. I'm an empath. I can take on people's energies. I can feel what they feel. And because of that, I don't like to leave the house. I just like to stay at home. I don't want to go to parties. It's just too much for me.
Yeah.
Well, becoming a victim of your fantastic ability. If you are an empath, that is a wonderful tool that you have to help others and to help yourself. That you don't have to use that as a reason to stay home and feel pity for yourself.
Yeah.
Because you have the ability to feel other people's energies. That's a wonderful ability to be able to actually engage with other people through that. And so I talk a lot with my clients about don't be victimized by your psi abilities. You have psi abilities to help you navigate through this human life. So use them, and you can also use them to help others. I'm not saying you have to, you know, do sessions and that kind of
stuff.
but your friends and family, you might be able to help them. So don't be a victim of your natural psi abilities. Mm. Embrace them and don't use them as an excuse. Oh, I'm so sensitive. I can't be with other people. Well, we're here to be with other people. We've come here to be with other people, to help one another, to love as much as possible, not to think that you're so different that you can't integrate
that
with
you
the
don't belong.
Population.
Yeah. Well, and that is exactly why you belong on the Experience or Resource Team.
Yeah.
Precisely why, Sev, because understanding that strange quality that somebody may have doesn't necessarily alienate them from the rest of the world.
Use it to your advantage, to your disadvantage.
Yeah, no,
but
precisely.
That's someone wanting to be the victim. So what are they going to pick? They have to pick something to victimize themselves. And so they have decided, oh, I'm going to pick my psi abilities. I'm too sensitive to join the rest of the world. Well, your psi abilities help you integrate with the world, help you maneuver through the world. Your psi abilities are not to be used to cut yourself off from the human race.
Mm, absolutely. Absolutely. Sev, thank you so much for your time, as always. It's always great talking with you. I forever feel empowered whenever I get off the line with you. It's fantastic. What can people do to get involved? What can people do if they maybe know somebody who is an experiencer that is reticent? What can people do if they are an experiencer and they are reticent, Sev?
Mm-hmm. Well, they can contact MUFON and they can share their story with us. Or if they don't want to do that, they can contact me directly through planetsev.com. But reach out to somebody. Or if you don't want to talk to contact MUFON, or you don't want to talk to me, then go on Facebook and find an experiencer group. Or if it's not Facebook, and maybe it's another platform. Mm. At first, when you join these platforms, you don't have to talk. You can just listen. Yeah. You know, no one's forcing you to come out immediately. It could take some time. It took me some time. It took me years and years, decades to come out. Decades.
Yeah.
And so I don't want it to take decades for other people.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. It's and what a beautiful mission for you to be there to help people once again with this experience when it happens to them, because it is, I've had the UFO experience. I have seen a flying object that I could not identify, most definitely. Wasn't a ball of light, wasn't a ship or craft or anything like that, just an amorphous blob in the sky. It was really wild. But I have had many paranormal contact experiences, shadow people, things like that in my life, being physically touched by a shadow person, all kinds of things. So I fully understand people's reticence to want to share. I fully understand people's fear initially with processing this experience.
Yes. And so you don't have to share if you're not ready, but it would really be helpful to at least surround yourself by non-judgmental people who listen to you and not cut you down. That's a big step in helping you process. And then maybe after you get used to that vibe of actually being with someone who's not going to make fun of you, that might help you come out a little bit later. And the other thing that I wanted to say was just a reminder about the MUFON Symposium.
Absolutely.
Month. Yeah. It's October 24th through the 27th. And I'm giving a special event on Friday, the 25th, from 1 to 3:30. We have 2.5 hours. And it's all about the ERT. I'm going to be talking. I'm going to tell my story a little bit and why I joined MUFON. And then I'm going to share actual, true experiencer resource team cases with pictures. Wow. drawings of people who come in contact with beings. And my special guests are Dr. George Medich, who is the executive committee director. He's a director of the ERT, and he was a professional baseball player for several teams. One of them was the New York Yankees, and he was also a surgeon. And my other guest is Earl Gray Anderson, who many of us know. We've seen him on TV. He is the state director for Southern California. And my other guest is the amazing Kathleen Martin. And she's the one that started the ERT.
Yes. Yes. And
it'll be an hour of Q&A. So if you come, you have the opportunity to ask all of us questions. And we're going to discuss the mental, the spiritual, and the physical effects of ET contact on the individual and on society. So if you are an experiencer, if you know someone who is, or if you're not, but you're just interested in this reality, this is really an excellent talk for you to come and participate.
Absolutely. The last year was my first MUFON symposium. I don't know if there. I mean, I guess someday I will join the atomic universe, and I will have attended my last. But it will be a long time, Sev. I intend to be there every year. I intend to sponsor every year that I can.
This year it's a little exciting because it's closer to the East Coast. They're usually not this close to the East Coast. It's in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So for those of you who don't want to fly all the way out to the West Coast for a MUFON symposium.
Yeah, or to Denver.
Maybe here.
So it's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to be there again and meet all of the researchers, meet all of the authors, all that kind of great stuff. It is a fantastic community of people doing great things out there for not only the world of disclosure, but the world of the experiencer, which I think is really the more important out of all of it.
Next, because there are a lot of military people who've made ET contact.
Yeah.
And they've already told their stories. And once those start to get revealed, then this whole reality is going to start shifting into the abductee, contactee phenomenon.
Yeah, precisely. Sev, once again, thank you so much for your time. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from MUFON, folks, make sure to stop on by MUFON and check out the symposium. Make sure to stop on by Sev's website, planetsev.com. Subscribe to her channel, Alien Spirit with Sev. You can find that channel right there on CuriousRealm.com. CuriousRealm.com/videos is where we have all of the YouTube channels of our guests embedded right there for you to easily find and subscribe to, folks. While you are online checking that out, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. That is where you can share your story and experience of the paranormal, UFO, or ET contact. If you have seen or experienced a cryptid or Bigfoot, if you are a targeted individual or a government whistleblower, you can leave pictures there, video, audio. Tell us about your experience, and we will present your case to our experts and hopefully get you some answers, folks. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. Thank you so much for having the conversations, everybody. That is what is important in our world, is open minds and open hearts. Not trying to convince people of paradigms, but trying to change paradigms through simply being and being right and proper with each other in the world. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And remember, everybody, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the knowledge vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.